over when the Germans bomb Pearl Harbor, forget it. I'm rolling.
Get shot. Quick, time out. Time out. Come on, guys. Come on.
Ray Ray is fundamental, okay. Number one podcast from the get-go. Yeah. And since you're listening, you got good sense, so let me break it down on this instrumental. It's basketball and all its essences. It's full of pop culture references.
Okay.
Point guards to stretch fours and fives. The last Buffy episode, despite survive. Never mind, let me get on track. Houston had a good run, and a team was stacked. We had plans for the T-Wolves, y'all remember? Yeah. Quick question, insight, who's your favorite member? Oops, I did it again. Hold up, wait, best team on the court, probably Golden State.
Yeah.
Korean them, yeah, they out this world, but ask Ray's top five, he's saying the Spice Girls.
Hey, guys. This is the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 94, recorded June 22nd, 2018, brought to you by RayRay.net. My name is Ray Ray. We just had the NBA draft. DeAndre Ayton picked by the Suns, Marvin Bagley III picked by the Kings, Luka Doncic picked by the Hawks, but traded to the Mavs. Interesting stuff, but really, like, it's hard to say, oh, this guy's going to be a bust, he's not going to do well. We love, like, just prognosticating what's going on, what's going to go on with the rookies in the NBA. But seriously, we should just wait until the season starts and see how it goes, because you never know who pans out. Like last year, who would have thought that Donovan Mitchell would come out of the pack on that Utah Jazz team, pick number 13? We've always had a lot of late picks that have done well in the NBA. Draymond Green, obviously, Golden State Warriors, pick in the second round, I believe, pick number 37, I think? 35. And he's become an all-star. Isaiah Thomas, the Mr. Irrelevant of the NBA draft, picked number 60 on 2011, went on to become an all-star, became one of the top five players in the 2016-17 season. So you never know. There might be some gem out there that will pan out for some team, so you never know. And we've seen number one picks become busts, although obviously Anthony Bennett is... was actually picked number 10 in all the mock drafts and all that stuff, and he was picked number 1 by the Cavs. And of course, Kwame Brown, picked in 2001. He was great in high school, but didn't pan out in the NBA so much. Andrea Bagnarni, picked number 1 in 2006. Had at least a few years, but really ultimately never panned out as a number 1 pick by the Raptors. So, you just never know what goes on in the draft. It's kind of a crapshoot. For this episode, we are going to talk to Sarah Spain from ESPN. You've seen her in a lot of ESPN shows, Around the Horn, First Take, Kylie Questionable, SportsCenter. You also know her mostly as a Chicago gal, so we don't talk much Chicago sports, but we do talk about various topics such as women in sports, Saved by the Bell. You'll get a good gem out of this one when we talk about Saved by the Bell in the beginning of this interview. And also, we talk about her career, basically, how she got there to begin with. And we are not going to ask her about her Super Bowl 41 experience. She's talked about this ad nauseum. And if you want to hear about that, I'll put the link on where she explained the entire thing on her podcast. That's what she said. If you want answers about that Super Bowl experience that she had, go ahead and go to that podcast. In the meantime, we're going to go ahead and go to this interview with Sarah Spain. But, first of all, just remember that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, download it on Stitcher, any podcast app you prefer. If all else fails, you can always go to the home site, rayray.net/fun. Follow me on Twitter at TheNoLookPass. Follow the podcast Twitter at RayRayIsFun, because you cannot fit RayRayIsFundamental in a Twitter handle. They only allow 16 characters. So, that is it. Promo, then Spain.
This is Shay Serrano, and you are listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast. I think Ray Ray should change the name of the podcast, but he likes it, so that's what you're listening to.
Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 94. My guest, She's been on various shows such as SportsCenter, Around the Horn, Highly Questionable, First Take. She's a columnist on ESPNW. You can hear her on ESPN Radio with Jason Fitz on a show called Spain and Fitz. And she also has a podcast called That's What She Said. Basically, if you watch ESPN, you know who she is. Sarah Spain, how's it going?
I'm good, thanks.
So, funny thing is that, like, a few hours before we went on, Dennis Haskins, also known as Mr. Belding, had mentioned you on Twitter, and yes. I know he was one of your guests last year on your podcast, and I tweeted him that, hey, I'm going to talk to Sarah Spain tomorrow, and I'm nervous, right? And then and then Mr. Belding's like, oh, she's fantastic, no agenda, she's great. And then he followed me on Twitter, so I should thank you for getting him to follow me on Twitter.
All right, you got the Mr. Belding follow, I love it. He's such a nice guy.
Yeah, so how was he on your podcast? Like, he seemed like a great guy.
So great. I mean, I would say the only thing that was missing is he was unwilling to rat out any of his co-stars or fellow actors about, like, any good juice or gossip that went on when they were filming. You know, no troublemaking that he could reveal, which just reveals him, I guess, to be an even nicer guy. But but yeah, he was super nice. And one thing I think is really cool about him is that he really still embraces that character. And I understand why some other actors or people would want to, like, move away from stuff if they get pigeonholed.
Right.
But it's so fun for those of us that have this really, like, profound connection to it that he's still willing to go along with it. Like, the first time I met him was on the ESPYs red carpet.
Right.
And I had him sing the theme song to Saved by the Bell. And he was, like, super into it. And, you know, he was joking around about giving me detention. And, you know, so he's willing to indulge those of us who, like, still get really excited about it.
Yeah, not many people actually embrace their characters. Like, they just really want to move on and say they don't want to be, you know, typecasted and stuff like that. But I'm glad that he's actually, like, willing to be Mr. Belding, basically, in real life. So, I might as well ask this, but I know Saved by the Bell didn't age that well, but who was your favorite character there?
Have you seen those Facebook videos that are like, Zach Morris is an a-hole or whatever they are?
Yeah, I did, actually.
Oh my god, they're so funny. Because when you're growing up, you weren't really thinking about that. But meanwhile, you're like, who were the writers that had him, like, cause Kelly to get in a car accident and then lie about it? And, like, you know, get his friends into bad situations? That's a tough one. I used to get called Jesse Spano kind of as a joke because I'm, you know, very tall and I used to have curly hair. And so I had and you know, Jesse Spano was very, like, women's rights, you know,
yes,
she was kind
yes.
of hard ass and, you know, a smart kind of kiss ass. So I used to get that comparison. I don't know. I mean, I probably Zach was my favorite back in the day. Now, of course, I know that he's a terrible person.
Yeah. Cause he's my favorite too. And of course, yeah, being a teenage boy, it's like, oh, he gets all the girls and stuff like that. And we look back at it now. It's like, oh man, what a jerk. Right?
Kind of a jerk. He had that sweet cell phone though. That was, like, bigger than his head.
I wonder if those are still around. Like, I kind of want one of those just for
I'm
show.
I'm sure they're in a museum somewhere. Yeah.
Did you go to Saved by the Max in Chicago?
I did. And I was so bummed because Mr. Belding actually was in town two or three times for it.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I was out of town. And he was like, you got to come. And it would have been awesome to, like, be at Saved by the Max with Mr. Belding. unfortunately, couldn't. And now it's out in L.A. And I know a lot of the cast members are doing drop-ins over there. But it was awesome in Chicago. The food was actually really good. And it was so perfectly like the Max. And it had all these little vignettes that, like, it was actually super fun. And then they recently did, at a different bar in Chicago, they did a Wayne's World pop-up just for, like, a week. And that was super fun. And so I think a lot of places are kind of getting to it. There's also a Stranger Things pop-up in Chicago for like a week.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good idea. Like, I think there should be just one place that, like, rotates through all of them. Like, it's Central Perk from Friends and then the diner from Seinfeld. Like, they would probably make a lot of money if they did it for a couple months at a time for each.
Yeah, exactly. Were you also a fan of those other TNBC shows, like California Dreams and Hangtime?
Of course. Well, Hangtime bothered me because they inexplicably had the girl playing in, like, a half top. And I was like, how come she doesn't just wear a uniform? Like, why does the girl have to be in a crop top, like, sports bra, and everybody else has a jersey? Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Of course. I love all those shows. California Dreams, I mean, none of them could keep up with Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
But they were good filler for your afternoon.
Yeah, exactly. Because back then it's like cartoons and then Saved by the Bell and California Dreams and all those things. So,
yeah.
Oh, what are we talking about again? Oh, yeah. you've been one of the more prominent faces of ESPN. Was this always the goal? Or I know you have a sports background, but I also remember you having a comedy background as well.
Yeah, so no, when I was growing up, I had a couple dreams, but it was mostly to be a cast member on Saturday Night Live, a star on Broadway. and or like a writer. They were all kind of together. It was all entertainment. And I wrote a lot as a kid, stories and stuff and poems. And then I was a singer. Unfortunately, I don't think I would have been good enough anyway to like make it on Broadway, but I probably would have been a salvageable singer songwriter type. But I got nodes in my vocal cords and had to get surgery for it, and it didn't really help that much. Gradually, just ground down over time again. So that's kind of why my voice is super low and super raspy, which works for sports radio, but doesn't work great for singing. My range is like super small now. So whenever I do karaoke, I always rap instead of sing. Saturday Night Live was the dream. It's still the dream. If I could drop everything now and be a cast member there, I would do it in a second. There weren't very many women in sports when I was growing up. Right. My parents aren't big into sports. They like playing them, and we would watch tennis a lot. But other than that, they weren't really into the major sports. And so when I was growing up, I was really into the Bulls, and there's no women in any capacity anywhere near the Bulls in the 90s. Like, there's no broadcasters, no radio. I don't even remember writers that I read religiously that were women. So, it just didn't strike me as a possibility. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my mom's a lawyer. She has a practice with my dad, and she was always, like, my parents were always, you could do anything you want. So it wasn't that I thought I couldn't. It just never even occurred to me.
Right.
And so I went to Cornell. I did track there as an English major. I knew I wanted to move to LA to try to do comedy. I moved there, and I actually ended up taking a TV hosting boot camp, like a weekend boot camp, and I hosted a fake Chicago Bears show because it was just supposed to be something that you were a quote-unquote expert in, and I didn't do interior design or, like, architecture. Like, everybody was wanting to be on, like, HGTV, and I didn't really think about doing – at the time, I thought I wanted to maybe be on E! I wanted to host Talk Soup. They were like, what's something that you know well that would be easy for you to fake just to practice what it's like to do teases and throw to break or whatever? So, you know, welcome to Chicago Bears Weekly. I'm Sarah Spain. Just because it was something I liked. And the teacher was like, oh, you want to do sports? And I was like, oh, no, there's no women. The only women are, like, sidelines reporters, and they don't get to say much, and they have to be, like, bubbly and pretty. And the other women that are anchors are very serious. And I want to be in comedy, and I want to be entertaining and fun. And then after that, I was like, you know what? Maybe I should try to combine the two. So I was doing the Second City Conservatory for Improv and some other comedy classes. And I was like, let me see if I can kind of take my love of sports, my interest in sports, and combine it with sort of my comedic sensibilities. And that's really when I made the transition over to sports. And it was like, should have done this all along. It's just so natural.
Right. I'm not going to talk to you about the Super Bowl thing. If you want, guys want to hear that, you can go to her podcast from 2 years ago. I'll link to that later.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. The first time I saw you was actually, remember Blogs with Balls in 2009? Remember that one? Yeah. That was the first time I saw you, and I think I even tweeted you. It's like, hey, I see you over there, and whatever. So, were you on ESPN by that time? I don't remember.
No, so 2009. So I believe at the time I was at Mouthpiece Sports, which was a startup website out of Chicago that was sort of intended to be like the voice of the athlete. No spin zone, not owned by any of the major newspapers or networks there. So it was supposed to be for anybody who wanted to, like, get to know the athletes better. But we had actual locker room access, which was sort of unusual for a website at the time. The people who started it had been in a business for a while, so they had a lot of connections, and they were able to get us access. So that was my first real sports gig beyond in L.A. when I was doing some PA and AP work, because I actually was in the locker rooms doing videos, writing columns, and getting to know, like, kind of the beat in Chicago. So I think I was still working there when I went to that Blogs with Balls. But it might have been the next year when I was doing some stuff for, like, Chicago Now, which is a Chicago Tribune site, and WGN TV, and some, like, because I didn't start till ESPN Radio till 2010.
I see. So what's a typical ESPN day for you? Say you're working around the horn on a Friday. What would a day be like for you?
I wish I had a typical day. It's so funny because I never wanted to be someone who had a regular schedule, and so I very much appreciate that I don't. If you say, where are you going to be Tuesday at 2 p.m. in 3 months, I won't be, like, at my desk, right? Like, that would be horrible for me. I would not want that. But at the same time, it's really hard to like, do some stuff when you have no idea what your day looks like. Like, when I go to my physical therapist, like, all these injuries from track, like, I'm supposed to be doing these exercises every day, but I don't wake up at the same time. I'm not in the same places. I can't just, like, schedule it. So I don't have a typical day. But if I was doing Around the Horn, essentially, so next week, Friday, we have a call around 9:30 Central, and they've already sent us a doc that has, like, a bunch of different topics and stories and columns and information on those topics. So I kind of run through the doc and see what the big news of the day is and what we might be talking about. We jump on the call, it's the producers and the panelists. And I think Tony Reilly's usually listening in the background, but he doesn't participate. And mm-hmm. we go through all the topics, and they kind of get a feel for what people are hot on, what topics might be boring because we all don't have strong opinions, or maybe we all disagree and there's nothing really to debate. And we'll go through all of that, and that's usually about an hour. And then I have about an hour and a half between then and when I need to be in makeup. So I'll either shower and get ready, or if I've already showered, I'll have breakfast, whatever. I'll take a cab over to where I shoot, which was in the John Hancock building right on Michigan, and now it's a couple blocks away in a different building. But mm-hmm. I go to the studio, do makeup, get in the seat, and then we tape a couple hours early so that they can edit all the pieces together. I would tape. I'm usually done by around 2:30, and then I got to mm-hmm. be back home to do my radio show from my closet that I turned into a radio studio in my house by about 3:30. So I've got about an hour to grab a late lunch and get home. And then 3:30 to 5, Jason Fitz and our producer and our board ops, everybody prep the show. What do we want to talk about? What's the rundown look like? What kind of sound do we want? What clips do we want to grab? Who are our guests? And then the radio show's from 5 to 8. And then about 8 o'clock, I usually either my husband and I order dinner or cook dinner or maybe go out. And then I usually like flop down on the couch and do all the things that I needed to do that I didn't do all day because I was busy, like email and expenses and write people back and watch mm-hmm. TV and just relax. And then mm-hmm. I go to bed at like 12:30 or 1 o'clock. And so on those days, I don't get to exercise unless I've recently, now that it's started to be nice out, I can take the dogs to like this like long path thing down the street and do my conference call while I'm working out. Otherwise, I don't have time during the day on those days because they go straight through.
Mm-hmm. I ask you this because I don't think people realize how much work all of you guys put in there. Like, they just think, it's we just get on TV.
Yeah, they just think,
right?
Oh, it's a half-hour show, so then you show up and tape it. No.
Exactly.
Same with radio. You know, it's mm-hmm. there's a lot of prep that goes in. And, like, during the day, I'm listening to podcasts in between all the places that I go. I'm reading all the stories. I'm catching up on – we have a document for our radio show as well where we all drop stories in throughout the day, what we might want to talk about, so that when we get to our meeting, we kind of already have an idea of what we're hot on. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of prep. Sports never takes a break. You know, you don't get to, like, take a day off and come back, and you'll be like, Dwight Howard got traded? Wait, they dropped him too? This person's hurt? What? This guy got fired?
Exactly.
Yeah, you have to stay up on it.
Mm-hmm. I'm Andy Roman, and you are listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
You've been on various shows on ESPN. Do you have a favorite, or am I going to get you in trouble for saying that you have a favorite?
they're all different. I mean, mm-hmm. I love Around the Horn because it's a real family, and the panelists all change, but you get to know what it's like to work with all of them. It combines my two loves of sports and talking, which mm-hmm. are two of my, you know, better things that I'm good at. You get to kind of take jabs at other panelists and then also, you know, give the quick tidbits about, you know, give your takes. And Tony Reale is just such a great guy to work with. Everybody there is awesome to work with. So mm-hmm. I really love that show. I love doing the Levitard radio show because it's such a well-oiled machine, and they're so well-produced. They have such a good time. Everybody plays their role, and it's episodic in a way that most sports isn't, where, like, if you miss out on something, you want to catch out. You're like, oh, I don't know what that joke is. So it's just that, again, is such a family. And one of the things I've said throughout my career since I started in sports is I really miss, like, the writer's room of Second City. I miss my improv group where we'd be in a room together and it'd be a bunch of smart, funny people coming up with sketches and coming up with ideas for our next show. And in my radio show, there's a little bit of that, mm-hmm. but it's very much playing the hits of the day. What are the biggest stories? There's not as much room for creativity, especially because we're not in the same place. Mm-hmm. And it's not always the same people on the show every night in terms of, like, the producers and board ops. Mm-hmm. So I love that the Levitard show and Around the Horn, both of them, especially Levitard, really remind me of that kind of getting in a room with a bunch of funny people and just letting it fly and seeing where things go. There's not a, you know, they're not beholden to a rundown. They don't care whether they hit any major topics. They could suddenly start talking about an 80s action movie and then spend the whole rest of the show talking about other 80s action movies, and it wouldn't even matter. So mm-hmm. I would say those are my two favorites.
Cool. This is tough. 2 years ago, he participated in which won the Public Service, which has men reading mean, disgusting, vile, degrading tweets towards you and Julie DeCaro. How did this come about?
Actually, an acquaintance of my husband, Brad Burke, who is a regular, everyday PR aficionado stud, has a podcast called Just Not Sports, and they have mm-hmm. people on and talk about anything, just not sports.
Right.
And he had read a bunch of columns every couple months about the abuse that women in sports get online, and would always be really struck by it. And he would follow a bunch of us, see it happening, and realize that people would read those and care for like a day and then be over it. And so he wanted mm-hmm. to come up with a thing that would somehow capture people's the tension more visceral to them, what this feels like and how much of a problem it is, how pervasive it is, and had it last a little longer than just a column that someone might read once. And so he actually came up with the idea and reached out to a handful of us, and Julie and I were the only ones willing to participate. And it was funny, it was like 2 weeks before my wedding, and so I was like, how long is it going to take? So just, you know, 2 hours or whatever, and I was like, all right, like, I'll do it, thinking it would be done. It was a good thing. It was a topic I care about talking about. It was a cause I care about. But right. I was like, okay, it'll be done, and I'll share it and whatever. So when it hits, it blows up, and it's crazy, and it goes viral. And so now, instead of thinking it was this one quick commitment, I was doing interviews up the wazoo as I'm leading up to my wedding, like nonstop stress. But it was so powerful, and it won a ton of awards and got so many people talking. And I really still talk about it a lot. I use it in a lot of panels that I speak on, because I think as much as people say they get it, I don't know that they really understand it. And as sad as it is, I think the reason that it was so powerful for a lot of people is because it was the men in the video that were emotionally affected. You know, you can have a lot of videos where women are pleading that this is what happens to us and it's terrible. You can have videos where women are sharing the things written to them. But there was something very striking, I think, about these unsuspecting guys who were not the ones who wrote the awful stuff, who just came in and thought they were reading, like, Jimmy Kimmel mean tweets that were funny. The way that they were affected and bothered and disturbed, and, like, some of them were on the verge of tears and were kind of shaking. And I think to see how affected them was really kind of the difference maker there.
I had told you a few years ago that I admire you for putting up with all this bullshit, and you still face this every hour, basically. Yeah. How to keep your sanity?
I will say I feel really lucky that Twitter started when I was already, like, a little bit older and a little bit established. I really wasn't, but it was enough that, like, I was like, oh, let me join this thing. I was working at Mouthpiece Sports. I wasn't a total rookie. Mm-hmm. And that it was, as my star sort of grew, so did social media, so that I've gotten a gradually thicker and thicker skin. Like, if it had been as bad as now right when I started, or if I was, like, someone who got 15 minutes of fame and you go from 0 to 100 and you have no prior knowledge of how bad it can be, I think it's much harder to handle. I sort of gradually over time got used to people saying bad things on YouTube or commenting on the videos on the site or Facebook or whatever. And then that kind of all got me ready for what is the worst of them all by far, which is Twitter. And, you know, the best thing for me is to remind myself that I feel sorry for these people instead of angry, because they must be so unhappy. It's like, what kind of happy, satisfied person would say these things to somebody? And then also, you know, Lindy West, who wrote this great book, Shrill, and has awful stories of being harassed online, including one guy who created all these accounts in the name of her dead father and talked, you know, would send her messages about how he was disappointed in her from the grave, and, like, just the worst possible thing you could imagine. She said, when people try to tell you to, like, don't feed the trolls, don't respond, they're saying that from a place of not really understanding what it's like to digest it all day, every day, and to have to hold it in and not talk back. And so she said she talks back because her mental health is more important to her than the feelings of one troll. So when people say, oh, that's probably what they want, I don't care. If every one of, like, 40 I feel like responding to, I'm going to. If I feel like clapping back and making them look stupid, I will. If I feel like using them as an example to show that this is some sort of pervasive point of view that I'm getting a lot of, if I see the same crap a lot of times, I'll pick one out and I'll use it as an example to shout it down, so that anybody who's maybe in the middle and doesn't know how they feel about that understands the problem and the issue there. And so I ignore it. I mute and block a ton of people, and then every once in a while I'm just feeling feisty, or someone hits the wrong nerve, or they're saying something damaging, and I just decide that I feel like speaking out against it. And I think it's really important that our women in the industry that are just great at their jobs and don't really engage and just set a good example, the you know, the Doris Burke, Jessica Mendoza type. And I think it's also really necessary for people like me to exist, because if we don't fight back, if we don't shine a light on it, it doesn't get any better. We just bury it and cover it up, which is kind of what we've been doing with so many different kinds of harassment for so long, that, you know, bringing it to the light and showing people what happens, I think, is really important.
Yeah, and on the same topic, basically, guys like Ed Werther, I know he worked for ESPN also, aren't helping. I believe it was Charlotte Wilder from SI mentioned that she especially wanted women to apply for the Sports Illustrated Breaking News job, and Ed says, what about the men? I mean, and we know men dominate the sports media world.
It was disappointing. You know, two things came to mind. One is that for someone in the industry for so long, I was sort of amazed that it appeared as though Ed had likely not spoken to any of his women colleagues about what it's like out there, right? And if he had, I can't imagine he would be so flippant and so lacking in understanding what her point was. Mm-hmm. There's already a pipeline for straight white men. There needs to be more outreach in order to create diversity in the newsroom. And diversity in the newsroom is beneficial to everybody. Mm-hmm. So the idea that you would say especially women does not mean not men, does not mean don't apply if you're a man. It means especially women. Put yourself out there. Take a chance. This is a place that we would welcome you. And the other thing that went through my mind is maybe there's a part of Ed who, when he got laid off from ESPN, felt like it was because there's an interest in hiring more diversity. I know that there are straight white men who think that right now is not a time for them. Forgetting, of course, that they still make up like 90% of the jobs, right?
Exactly.
I think there are certain people who genuinely view the act of hiring a woman or a person of color as a political act. Like, mm-hmm. they genuinely think the fact that ESPN employs people of different ethnicities and genders, and even non-binary folks, as some sort of statement as opposed to a business decision to make sure that they have a diversity of voices and experiences and backgrounds, which is just smart. And mm-hmm. so I think it's really sad that there's that point of view. And I certainly think there's a possibility that when Ed got let go, he thought that it was because of this influx of people. And that would be sad, mm-hmm. but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'd like to get hired by someone. Like, I'm a Filipino American. Right. Like, it'd be great for me to, like, go somewhere. Because right now, I understand that the media world is basically dominated by white men. So I'd like to have a place in there, too.
Yeah, it's getting better. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. But, you know, it'd be like if an outlet was really lacking in Asian American representation and posted a job and then said, you know, especially we would love to see some Asian American applicants. That's really a hole of ours. That's not saying no one else can apply, and it's certainly not unfair to anybody else, especially if they already make up the majority of the newsroom. So it was just a little tone deaf and honestly pretty surprising.
Yeah. With that said, what do you want to say to women that are trying to break into this business?
Oh, my God, so many things. First of all, work on your thick skin now because you're going to need it. It's just there are just men in the world, and some women, but mostly men, that still believe that they're is no place for women in this industry. It has nothing to do with whether your opinions are good, you know your stuff, you're good at your job. It's purely the idea that they think it's their space and that women don't belong in it. Do not listen to them. Do not even give them a second of your thought, but know that they will be coming for you, that you will need to block and mute, and occasionally respond if you feel like it. Also, you know, there's so many studies about imposter syndrome and how it affects women more than men. It's not a women-only issue. But because of all the societal factors that are involved, it is more pervasive amongst women, and it affects them more when they're looking to apply for jobs or continue with jobs. And that's the idea that you're going to be discovered as a fraud, that you don't deserve the success you're having. And people that are Nobel Prize winning authors and stuff, Pulitzer Prize winners, still suffer from imposter syndrome, that my next book is going to be bad and everyone's going to suddenly realize I'm not talented. And it affects women in ways, and there's so many studies that show that women don't apply for jobs unless they're way overqualified, and men apply when they're way underqualified. So women, if you're out there, just believe in yourself, and the worst that can happen is you don't get it. But put yourself out there and be your best advocate. And I remember when I was out in LA, one of the things that I learned was that basically in this industry, you're your own PR, you're your own seller. So if you were a real estate agent and you were selling a house, you would tell everybody how great it was, and you would point out all the wonderful things, and you would really like do your best to show them what was so great about it. That's how you have to treat yourself in this business. You are your own PR, your own self-advocate. You need to be able to sell yourself even in moments when you're insecure and you're unsure of yourself. You gotta fake it till you make it. You gotta, because until you are of a certain status, you're probably not gonna get all the validation that you would want and need from peers and bosses and fans and even yourself. So you gotta just fake it till you make it, because eventually those people come out, and it's such a validating feeling to have support of, you know, people that you respect and feel like, okay, I'm doing a great job. But you're not going to get those when you're just starting out. So you got to give them to yourself.
Yeah. It just saddens me to hear that you have to have thick skin and get mute and block on everybody, basically. It's like, it's just so sad for me to hear that. But
it sucks.
Unfortunately,
I mean, it's so unfair.
Yeah.
And you're going to deal with I have a lot fewer issues with athletes in my time than I do with fellow media. So you're going to have to really understand how to have a thick skin and not let everything bother you, but to know where that line is when it becomes like on harassment, and unfortunately that's still really prevalent, especially with young up-and-comers.
It's Kristen Ledlow from NBA Inside Stuff, and I was once on the Ray Reyes Fundamental Podcast. Once. That was enough.
Quick hits. Sometimes people expect something NBA-related on this cast, so I'll ask you an NBA-related question. Is it really hard to cheer for the Bulls right now?
You know what's so sad, actually, is because all my jobs are national now. Mm-hmm. I don't have as much time to pay attention to local. So unless the local teams are worthy of discussion, it's harder for me to get time to, like, watch and pay attention. So
right.
the Bulls, it's not even that it's hard to watch. It's that I just don't as much because I'm like, you guys stink. You're so frustrating. And I don't ever need to address you unless it's for, like, somebody getting punched. It's never about the basketball. And that's kind of how the Blackhawks were this season as well. It was so sad. I was like, oh, you guys are so irrelevant. but, yeah, I mean, honestly, with the Bears, I'm more optimistic about the Bears right now. But with the Bears and the Bulls, it almost feels like, oh, there's new ownership. I don't feel particularly optimistic.
Got it.
The family-run businesses where you're not really sure if the people who can make a significant change are the ones that are on the job.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just not certain I feel that optimistic about either one of those teams right now.
Celebrity that you were starstruck with recently?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, I was at a Bruce Springsteen show on Broadway where I was like 30 feet away, 20 feet away, but I didn't like meet him. So I'm guessing you mean someone that okay. I was like
yeah.
interacting with.
Mm-hmm.
Man, they all start to blur together. Like, I like the only athlete that I like lose my mind over is Michael Jordan.
Right.
The other ones, when I saw Charles Barkley at last year's ESPYs, or maybe it was 2 years ago, it was so great. He was like, hey, Sarah, congrats on the wedding. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, he knows my name and that I'm married. You know, like, wow, he like really knows. But I'm trying to think of, yeah, I don't know. Like, I haven't been around anyone of late that I've really lost it over.
I guess we'll get back to you the next time you come on this podcast. How's that?
I need to have more fun, I guess. I need to get back out there.
Name me a guilty pleasure song or two that you still jam out to.
Miley Cyrus, Party in the USA, for sure.
Ah.
I don't think it's a guilty pleasure, but other people are not as much a fan as I am of Starship, We Built This City. But that is a banger.
Man.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any other ones. I don't know why, but I'm obsessed with that song that got popular during a Christmas ad that I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Very random, but I like it.
That's fantastic. Can I have your dogs?
Absolutely not. Not even for a second.
Oh, man. Sarah, go ahead and publicize your social media, your internet works, any shows you want to advertise. Go ahead.
All right. You can follow me on Twitter and only say nice and constructive things at Sarah's name. Sarah with an H, family country. You can follow me on Instagram. Same rules apply. Spain2323. Facebook.com/Sarah Spain fan page, I think, is the public page there. SarahSpain.com. There's not a ton on there, but there's some blogs and photos and videos, and you can contact me, like, via my management and stuff there. I'm on Snapchat, but I almost never use it, and I think it's just SarahSpainSpain2323. And yeah, listen to Spain and Fitz, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern every weekday. Watch Around the Horn. Watch Highly Questionable. Listen to my podcast. That's What She Said to Sarah Spain. It's usually up every Tuesday. And rate, subscribe, like, etc. And yeah. And I've got a really awesome E60 feature coming out in the fall, so keep your eyes open for that.
Nice. Yes. You have been one of the strongest voices in sports. Personally, I think you're awesome. You took one of my suggestions
for
a story for this girl's baseball team.
I did, and it was awesome, and that family is just the best. I love them.
Yeah, shout out to Karen DeVinny and her daughter, G.
Yeah.
You just stopped by my personal FB page a little bit just to leave a few comments, so I really appreciate that. I hope you get that tonight show gig going.
For sure, that's right.
Thanks so much. Game over,
yeah! Hashtag blame Ray Ray.